Thanks very much. Part of what brings me to this is I've been very active. I chair the Community Preventive Services Task Force, and it's wonderful to have Ned on that task force. And I also started as a founding member of the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force. So I've had a lot of experience with this evidence stuff and how squirrely it is. I just want to add one thing to what Ned said. When we look at mammography, it's clear we need a better screening test. So let's also think of what we can do to get there, because whether it's 15% or 20% reduction in mortality, you know, it's not where we want to be. So let me now move into applying cancer screening guidelines in practice. I regret to say I have no financial conflicts. And the challenge is that there are evidence-based recommendations for cancer screening. Many of those recommended are underused. Many of those not recommended or of uncertain or low benefit are overused. And there are large disparities in the delivery and the use of these services. So let's begin by looking at what we know works. These are the recommended cancer screening service. I hope this is up to date, but may not be entirely. You can go certainly to the web and check, but these are an A or B recommendations, and you can see these, the B for the women 50 to 74. You can also see the BRCA modification for cervical, those who have been sexually active with the cervix, and colorectal adults from 50 to 75. And again, for many of the things that we're very concerned about, there's an I statement. Whether the lung is going to change with the helical CT scanning remains to be seen. But for other things like pancreatic, like ovarian, like even prostate cancer and skin cancer, a lot of people get tests for a lot of these, and the question is, does that make sense? But there are other important strategies for preventing cancer. Vaccines. The HPV vaccine is very important. Hepatitis B vaccine is very important as well. We know that hepatitis B increases the risk of liver cancer. And risk reduction. Let's not forget tobacco control, which is critical. Physical activity, nutrition. If we're going to deal with some of these overweight problems that contribute to a lot of chronic disease, we need to focus on these other strategies as well. Screening is not the only one. But let me start by talking about the large gaps between what we know and what goes on in practice. There's a National Commission on Prevention Priorities that first chaired by David Satcher, now Eduardo Sanchez, that ranked the recommended clinical preventive services for the entire U.S. population. And it's a group of people from public health, from clinical medicine, from health plans and methodologists who've looked at two particular issues. Number one, the clinical preventable burden. How much would health be improved from delivery of each clinical service? We did what we knew and everybody got it. What's the opportunity? And then cost effectiveness. What's the cost per quality or the value, in essence, of each of these services? And we put these two together. And here's just the table. And five is the best. Cost saving would be obviously the best. And a cost per quality of, in the bottom range here would be less felicitous. And the same thing here in terms of the qualities that could be saved. You can see that we did it in a relatively arbitrary but necessary quintiles. So here is how they come together. And you can see that at the top of the list, can you all read that? I hope you can. Good. Then I can tell you whatever I want. But it will be, it's on the web, it's going to be on the web, right? So the highest ones are to discuss daily aspirin use with men over 40 and women over 50. Childhood immunizations, not surprising. Smoking cessation, advice and help to quit for adults. Those are at the top. The next is alcohol screening and brief counseling. That gets a 9. And then in the 8 category, I won't go through all these, are colorectal cancer screening for adults over 50. Hypertension screening and treatment for adults 18 plus, influenza immunizations for adults over 50, and vision screening adults 65 plus. These could be updated. This is from 2007, but it gives you a sense of a relative ranking because we have to, in many cases, set priorities. I'm just going to go over a couple of examples, though, and show you some of the disparity issues. This is colorectal screening. And so what can we gain if we deliver them? On the left-hand side there, you see the percent up to date, and you notice that for Asians, They're only 31% up to date versus 51% for whites, 42% for blacks, 31% for Hispanics. But look now at the number of life saved, because of the difference in the size of those relative populations, these numbers are different. So the black would save 1,800 versus Hispanic 700, Asian 330, whites only over 11,000. On the other hand, so that's one way to look at a priority. Another way to look at it is, what are the lives saved if the percentage with screening was up to 90% in terms of what's the annual impact per 1,000? In other words, impact per individual, per size of the population. You can see the biggest impact there is clearly in African Americans. So there are a lot of different ways to look at priorities. I'm not going to go through these that you can't see, but I'm going backwards. That's not helpful. The other point, critical point I want to make is what the Preventive Services Task Force does is look at what works in terms of screening. And what we have to do is marry that. That's the one-on-one clinical encounter. But what are all the things that affect that? What are the ways that we get people, in fact, to be screened? What are the changes in health systems? What are the changes in education? What are the things that others than primary clinicians can do? That's the province of the community guide. How many of you have been to the community guide website, the communityguide.org? About half. Well, or maybe two-thirds. That's great. But we look at healthcare system changes, insurance benefit coverage, access, and then group education and media, behavioral and social issues, and environmental and policy change, all of which are important. These two go together. Here's the Community Guide website. You can look at it at your leisure. It's thecommunityguide.org, very hard to remember. So here's what we do. We develop evidence-based recommendations for population-based services. And just like the clinical task force, it's an independent federal panel. It's convened and staffed by CDC and some other federal agencies, and it uses similar methods, but taking into account that you don't have randomized clinical trials for most things in the population. And to date, we have reviewed and made recommendations on 200 interventions, but there's another 500 plus where we need to. And fortunately, this has now been established by Congress, and we hope to get the money to accelerate this. So here's the review of cancer topics. In terms of breast, cervical, and colorectal cancer, the things we've looked at are client-oriented interventions like group education or reducing out-of-pocket cost, provider-oriented interventions, incentives, reminders, preventing skin cancer. We've looked at policy interventions and education at work sites and schools, interventions targeting children's parents and caregivers, and then community-wide, mass media kind of stuff. And then informed decision making, the kind of things that help clients make better decisions about screening. So here is for informed decision making recommendations, and you can see I'm going to show you for promoting informed decision making for cancer screening, it got insufficient evidence. We don't have the ABCs, but it's insufficient evidence. Whereas if you look here for provider assessment and feedback, and these are provider-oriented recommendations. What do you give to doctors, doctors' groups? Provider assessment and feedback of how well you're doing is recommended based on good evidence. Provider incentives, we have insufficient evidence. And provider reminders and recall systems are recommended based on good evidence. Okay, now what about the client-oriented reminders, trying to get more of those people to come in? And you can see that while for the three cancers, that they're pretty much in a line, there are some differences. For example, we don't have for reducing structural barriers evidence for cervical cancer. That would be reducing out-of-pocket costs. Reducing structural barriers, making it easier to obtain those services. The same, we have different issues for reducing out-of-pocket costs, where it's recommended for breast cancer, we don't have enough evidence for colorectal or cervical. So we're looking at it by particular type of cancer, and we don't know all the reasons these are different, but you can surmise some of those. So let's just take reducing out-of-pocket costs. The good news is that health reform requires first dollar coverage of the A and B recommended clinical preventive services. Changes the whole playing field. And that begins this year for all new plans, and as of 2014, it then applies to all existing plans. And while effective clinical services will be covered, there's no system for paying for the interventions that are recommended by the community guide, those that go directly to providers, those that go to health plans, those that go to the clients. So that's still a big gap. Now, we also need very practical tools to help translate the recommendations into practice. If I'm a health plan, what exactly should I do to, in fact, implement these recommended interventions? If I'm a physician group, what exactly should I do? If I'm the government and I'm focused on education to increase screening rates, what should I do in terms of mass media? So there is that need. And I think a wonderful website and really pioneering was Cancer Planet. How many of you know Cancer Planet? Okay, almost everybody, so I don't need to spend any time on this, but it really helps you develop your own comprehensive cancer control plan or program through a very simple five-step process, and that's exactly what we need to do. Now, this is a research-tested intervention program for cancer. It helps planners make decisions about options. It provides web-based access to very comprehensive information, and it describes the evidence-based cancer prevention and control programs that have been implemented in different places that were developed and tested by researchers, and it includes program materials, you know, the very basic stuff that you need, the blocking and tackling, if you will, for getting these programs done. And then it has criteria for inclusion of programs, that they've been developed and tested through a peer-reviewed research grant, that the findings have been published in a peer-reviewed journal, that it contains messages or materials or other intervention components that can be used in a clinical setting or in a community setting. What should state and local, how many of you hear from state and local agencies? Anybody? Okay, well, there's three or four, but I got something for you, too. Most state and local programs have minimal cancer control programs, but I think they're very important opportunities in educating the public and providers. Who's going to do that if we don't? Promoting the adoption of evidence-based screening guidelines. Who's going to say, this is what we know works, we focus on that. To work closely with voluntary groups like the Cancer Society and professional groups to make sure that effective services are being delivered. And then we need to be the folks looking at surveillance to say, what are the gaps? Why is this not working? Or in this population, why in the Vietnamese population do we have low cervical cancer screening rates? Those kind of issues. That's core public health. We also are a trusted source of information for the public in terms of clear, consistent messages. That's our job, is to try and put these messages together in clear ways and to segment the market. You know, everybody's not going to get the same message and respond to it the same way. We have to be sensitive to different patient groups. We have to tailor messages to different groups. We do that routinely. And you have to communicate in their language. But communicating in their language isn't enough. It's how you talk about things based on cultural competency that is absolutely critical. Here's an example from San Francisco. This is a Vietnamese English version of breast cancer and what Vietnamese women should know. It's just a very good example. We have information as well, and many of you, I'm sure, have seen information in many languages and culturally sensitive. We also have a very important role in quality improvement. We in public health should be assuring the delivery of appropriate service, but equally important, much more difficult, is to reduce, in fact, eliminate the misuse and inappropriate use. There is too much of that going on today, and the incentives support it. We need to monitor the delivery of services, identify disparities, and assure delivery to the uninsured and to the insured, the newly insured, who aren't going to necessarily know that they're eligible for this. And we also have to worry about capacity, because we're going to be straining capacity for some of these screening programs. We're 16,000 providers short for primary care in terms of physicians, and it's going to be 25,000 in the next 10 years. What do we do about that? What are the other models we need to do for screening? So we need to complete the evidence base and the guide to community preventive services, and health reform does require both task forces, I'm glad to see. State and local agencies need to improve the quality of delivery of clinical preventive services. That has to be a core public health responsibility. And we need better research on effective population strategies to improve the appropriateness of care. What are our challenges? Well, education about the services that are needed and not needed. As soon as you start saying something's not needed, not everybody is your friend. Confusion about clinical options, for example, the PSA or the issues around sigmoidoscopy or colonoscopy. What about the misaligned incentive that's so confusion? I mean, unfortunately, there are a lot of physicians who do have conflicts of financial interests, if you will, and the industries that promote screening, sometimes appropriate, but not always. And then the media. The media wants to focus on controversies. I've been trying to get a story for 10 years in the Los Angeles Times about the incredible reductions we have in cardiovascular disease and some cancers and the like. I can't get that. But you get, for example, an adult film star who has HIV, you know, and is in, everybody in the world wants to know what we think about that. So we have to somehow figure out how to get through that clutter and to get the media interested in being an adjunct rather than somebody who confuses the public. The other issue is that there is inadequate monitoring and feedback. We don't know who's doing what, how much. Electronic health records are going to help that quite a bit. And so the feedback loop to physicians, to systems of care, is going to be very important. But in conclusion, we fail to deliver effective services in many cases. We over-deliver those that offer limited benefits. We do have effective strategies to increase utilization. Look at the community guide, pair it with the clinical guide. And local and state health departments, along with their partners, need to play a more central role in the delivery of effective services. Thank you.